Welcome to International Dispute Negotiation, your guide to resolving disputes everywhere.
This is Mike McElrath, and this podcast is about different ways of accepting and managing the risks of dispute resolution, presenting them through the eyes of experts from different countries and backgrounds.
The basic rule in day-to-day life when you're sober is you cannot express anger and other negative emotions. You can't get angry at someone in public, because if you do, you automatically lose the argument.
Camisea is a region in the Peruvian Amazon that holds one of Latin America's largest gas fields. It's a place where my own company has provided equipment. It's also home to a people who practice a truly alternative form of dispute resolution. This week's IDN is a discussion with someone who knows this practice well.
My name is Glenn Shepherd. I'm an anthropologist, and within anthropology, my specialty is medical anthropology, which is the study of different medical healing traditions around the world.
I met with Glenn in early 2010 at the American Museum of Natural History in New York.
I've worked for more than 20 years with an indigenous group known as the Machiginga, or Matsiginga in their language.
Machiginga suppress conflict when sober, using plants to smooth things over and leaving an outlet for conflict only at social gatherings involving substantial beer drinking. But as Glenn explains, their lifestyle is changing as modernity encroaches. Beliefs in witchcraft have become vogue, and shamans have begun to act as proto-lawyers and proto-judges, taking on the functions previously filled by traditional plants and beer.
I'm not a legal anthropologist. I don't study legal systems. I'm a medical anthropologist. I work with medical systems. But the reason I got interested in Machiginga concepts of conflict and conflict resolution is because I noticed within their usage of medicinal plants, there was a whole category of plants that are specifically designed to treat people who are angry or people who are in conflict with one another.
These are plants that have actually medicinal effect, or these are plants that have a placebo?
Well, I'll get to that. It's very interesting what these plants turn out to be. So anyway, there's this whole series of plants that are, they bathe them on their heads and they drip them in their eyes, the same plant. And let's say there's two spouses who are quarreling a lot. They will take certain plants and bathe them on their heads, and there's another little leaves, and they'll crush them in their eyes. Some third party will intervene and say, you know, you guys are fighting a lot, this is not good, and they'll put the plant in the eyes of the two spouses and maybe even their children. And the idea of this plant is that it gets rid of those angry feelings and those angry emotions, which are not considered to be, it's not good manners to express anger or even physical pain, sort of negative emotions in public.
So they're very, very stoic.
Very stoic. The Machiginga show this incredibly stoic attitude.
So in the absence of a formal legal system, of a way of resolving disputes, I guess they try to make sure that they don't have the emotions and the negative, which give rise to disputes.
So they don't have disputes. It's not they don't have disputes. What they do is they initially, you resolve disputes by avoiding them, by not expressing your anger at the person straight up. And so the first step is repression and avoidance. If you're angry with someone, you avoid them, you don't talk to them. But if two spouses are quarreling, they're quarreling. There's no way around it. They can't avoid one another. So they invoke these medicinal plants, some third party will come and put it in their eyes, the idea being to get rid of those emotions, to eliminate those negative emotions.
Without addressing the actual source of the conflict between them, they address the emotional consequences.
That's the first step, is you address the emotional conflict, you address the emotional expression of this by using these plants which, according to them, eliminate the angry feelings. Now, when I looked into these plants, there were sort of two groups. One of them is a group of plants that's the same family as coffee, which is a family. Quinine is the same family. So it is a family that actually has active principles. And, you know, coffee is a stimulant. So it affects the central nervous system. And one time I was actually traveling with a close matchmaking friend of mine, Mateo, and his wife, Aleja. And they were having lots of disputes during the journey. And he decided it was time to fix these problems. And so he himself went out and got these plants. And he put it into her eyes, his daughter's eyes. He says, well, you're sort of part of the family. We're traveling together. I want to put it in your eyes as well. And he gave me, it was at night.
To you as well.
Yeah, he put it into my eyes as well. And it's a plant in the same family as coffee and quinine. These plants, it's a family that has lots of...
And you were in the jungle and you said, what the hell? You want to give me medication?
So he put this in my eyes and it was soon after...
You didn't have any reservations about that?
No. Yeah. I've used lots of... I try as many things as I can.
You got your PhD at Berkeley, okay.
And so I put this stuff in my eyes and I could not go to sleep. It was like I was up until 4 in the morning. It was as if I'd taken like 3 shots of espresso. So the plant, it's not... I mean, of course, there's always a symbolic value, a placebo value, but the plant itself has some kind of activity on the central nervous system.
And what happened? Did they calm down after that? Did the negative emotions go away?
Well, the next day, they said they're feeling better and so on. But, that anger, we're all human beings, I think, and the anger doesn't just go away, even as they try to suppress it.
Particularly if your approach is, let's address the symptoms. I mean, this is almost, yeah.
And so, inevitably, I think these things build up. And
but this is like the arguments that we have somebody, which I'm very angry with you, so don't be angry.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
And the conflict sort of continues, but it all continues sort of under the radar screens. No one publicly accuses anyone of stealing or doing anything. That's considered to be very bad. And so what happens is eventually there'll be a big manioc beer drinking party, which is that sort of the conspicuous consumption. It's not very strong, but if you drink enough of it, you do get drunk. And when they get drunk, that's when all of these social tensions that have been suppressed and avoided in day-to-day life, they all come out. But they come out in this very ritualized format, which is one of the main ways is through singing.
But before we get to this, just to be clear, so the rule of the Machigenga is no expression of negative emotions. You can't have conflict when you're sober.
I mean, it's this small scale society. There's no formal legal institutions, but inevitably, despite all of the social norms that they have of generosity and so on, conflicts emerge between people. And so the basic rule in day-to-day life when you're sober is you cannot express anger and other negative emotions. You can't get angry at someone in public. Because if you do, you automatically lose the argument. If you get angry in public when you're sober, you've lost the argument. You're the one who's the source of the anger.
What do you mean you lose?
In the court of public opinion, if two people are sober and one of them gets visibly altercated and angry at the other one, the people will blame that person. He's the one to blame, or she's the one to blame
because of the manifestation of the negative emotion.
But it won't happen because they just don't get angry in public. It just doesn't happen. When they're all together drinking manioc beer, and they'll drink and they'll drink and they'll drink and they'll start getting drunk, and then people start dancing with one another and singing, and they enter into these singing duels. They have these sort of ditties, these folkloric songs, and then begin improvising on top of these songs. And in that singing, they'll express all of the conflicts that they've had, like, you owe me a machete because I gave you whatever. Or, a wife will tell her husband, you've been sleeping around with that other woman, or vice versa. And then the other person in response has to then sing a response to that. And the whole logic of this singing is you always want to keep a smile on your face and keep laughing. You never want to get angry, and you want to try and show that the other person is the source of the anger.
It's the same rule.
When people are drinking, they're allowed to express these conflicts in this ritualized way usually through singing. The people who are listening and watching will sort of decide in for themselves who won the argument or who won the conflict. And the person...
So it is a court. It's a court of public...
Literally the court of public...
How many people attend these ritual drinkings?
Yeah, there'll be 15 people or 60, 80 people. I mean, in the biggest ones, you'll have 60 or 70 people.
Court of public opinion can be a pretty big court.
Pretty big.
And apply a lot of pressure. And what happened... But what is the result of that... dispute resolution, right? Well, has the dispute been resolved?
Well, what they say is, and you'll ask them, well, such and such was pretty angry. At, you know, they were fighting over this thing. And they'll say, it was the Masato talking. Anything that you say is forgiven.
Well, it sounds like in negotiation theory, negotiation concepts, there's actually a definition of a particular type of negotiator. You have competitive negotiators, cooperative negotiators. Then you have people that are called avoiders, that they avoid conflict. It actually sounds like a culture of conflict, conflict avoiders.
Yeah.
That they keep it inside them. They don't want to deal with the conflict. They deal with the conflict in a way in which they have to be disinhibited to bring it out.
And they aren't responsible for their actions. When they say the angry things they say, they are not fully responsible. It was the Masato that was talking. It wasn't me.
So you can almost summarize this in a set of rules for the culture. The one is, first, rule number one, no expressing negative emotions, particularly anger, when you're sober. The second one is you get to collect your injustices. Right. Keep a track record of the problems that you've had. And the third rule would be, when you take those injustices to a session where you're going to be drinking beer together, Masato, and then you express them in the form of singing accusations and singing insults. And then the day after, whatever the outcome is, whoever has responded the most negatively towards this is deemed to have lost. That may be enforced through the court of public opinion. The next day, any insults are washed away, and you go back to life as normal because it was the Masato, the alcohol, that was talking.
Unless the person resorts to physical violence, in which case they're
banished. In which they're banished. But how is this society, has this culture held up? I mean, are they collapsed on themselves, or they're just barely holding on, or are they?
Well, this is the interesting thing. Whereas, 50, 75 years ago, many of the Machiganga lived in communities of 25, 30 people. Now they're living in communities of 250, 300 people. And this has generated a level of new kinds and new levels of social conflict that didn't happen in the smaller sort of family-based communities. Now, resolve things in the past through these plants and social avoidance, and then this ritual expression in the Masato parties. And then today, they're living at a level of population density and density of social interactions, it's almost as that old system can't support the stress anymore. And so in this context of the modern system, the shamans become like the lawyers and the psychotherapists.
Very interesting.
Because when someone has a complaint about some illness, they'll go to the shaman or the healer, and the shaman or healer will then diagnose who is it that caused that. Who is responsible for your illness? Who is the, and what he'll do is he'll talk to the person, and they'll talk about all these, like a psychotherapeutic session. They'll talk about, well, who did you dream about? Who have you had bad dreams about? And the patient.
They're lawyers. They're fact finding.
Yeah, they're fact finding. Who did you lend what to whom? And who have you had conflicts with? And the shaman will end up deciding, there's the person who bewitched you. But the curious thing is that witchcraft is this modern phenomenon. It's modernity brought witchcraft.
Modernity brought witchcraft.
Rather than the other way. You'd expect modernity to get rid of these superstitions, but it made them just come to life.
So the modern life brought witchcraft to the Machiganga.
Absolutely.
They're police and
lawyers
and judges.
And psychotherapists, because they're the ones who figures out, you've got these problems, these health complaints, and they'll sort of talk to you and figure out, there's the source of your problem.
This is really interesting, though, because it looks like as you put them together, whether it's they're called shamans or something else, that demand in a larger complex society has given rise to the need for somebody to fill the role of to mediate between the various constituencies that aren't getting along, right, and to find a resolution that people can live with.
And the interesting thing is that because they live in this society of conflict avoidance, the conflicts become somatized. The conflicts go into your body. You can't express your anger at such and such or your conflict with that person. And so what happens is you get sick. And to resolve that conflict, you blame that person for having bewitched you. The shaman diagnoses it, and that word gets out that you bewitched such and such. And therefore the witch, if lots of people complain about being bewitched by a certain person, the witch can then be banished.
this would be the emergence of ethical rules governing lawyers.
Yeah.
You've been listening to International Dispute Negotiation. This podcast is presented by the International Institute for Conflict Prevention and Resolution, CPR. CPR is a membership-based nonprofit organization that promotes excellence and innovation in public and private dispute resolution, providing an international resource for the avoidance, management, and resolution of business disputes. For further information about CPR, or to download archived versions of this podcast, go to www.cpradr.org. Questions about this podcast or the issues discussed can be addressed to idn@cpradr.org. The music of Note Noir is used with permission.